friends. Welcome to the Creative Impact Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Caldwell, and I'm so happy you're here. Each episode, I take some time to chat with fellow artists about life, faith, and the impact of the arts.
I find really like a lot of times when I'm starting to feel the most burnout is when I'm not letting myself be creative for my own sake. It's all, you know, okay, we got to get this choreography done for the show, or, you know, I got to write this blog post because I haven't written anything in a long time, you know, and then the creativity goes from being a gift that we have to a burden, something on our to-do list.
Hi friends, it's so good to be with you today. You're listening to episode 123 with Shannon Dooling Kane. Shannon is a dance educator, choreographer, writer, and founder of The Holistic Dance Teacher. She combines her love of writing with her love for the dance community in her work, where through her blog, resource collection, and in-person events, she helps dancers, choreographers, and dance teachers elevate their dance life and find more joy in the dance studio. I also love how her approach helps students grow not only in dance technique and artistry, but also in their overall well-being. She and I definitely have a similar heartbeat in wanting to foster a positive classroom environment and recognizing the power of a teacher to create that community. We talk about her work as a teacher and a choreographer, and also about her work with the National Dance Education Organization, also known as NDEO, where she worked for over a decade in research, advocacy, and writing. One of my favorite parts of our conversation today is when Shannon shares about the importance of prioritizing ourselves as educators, because the tendency is to give and give and give and then end up at a place of burnout. She talks about really practical things and ways to help prioritize our own well-being as well as our students. I hope this conversation encourages you today, and I would love to hear from you. If you're a Spotify listener, you can actually leave a message right there in the app, or you can find us on Instagram or Facebook at Creative Impact Podcast and send us a message. If you're enjoying the podcast, I would be so honored if you would take a few moments to rate and review the show wherever you happen to be listening. Thank you so much for joining us today, and enjoy my conversation with Shannon Dooling Kane. For being here, Shannon. Yeah. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast and to get to introduce you to our listeners today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just to give people a little bit of a background on who I'm here with as they're listening. So I'm here with Shannon Dooling Kane, and she is a dance educator, choreographer, also creates a lot of really incredible resources, which I'm excited to talk about today through The Holistic Dance Teacher and also Shannon Dooling Dances. And so we actually got to meet by being part of a panel discussion together, or like a panel presentation maybe, on like wellness for dance educators, and just really loved your contribution to that. So I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I am really excited to be here. I really enjoyed connecting with you and learning more about your work. And I've been diving into it more since we've met. And I'm just so grateful that you have this platform and that we get to talk a little bit and share.
Yes, for sure. It's going to be fun to connect listeners to your work as well. And just kind of cool, you know, because we have probably similar communities in a lot of ways, but in different regions of the US. So it'll be really fun to connect that. And yeah, I'd love to give you a chance as well, just if you have anything else you want to share, maybe about like family, any other things you're up to currently.
Thank you. Yeah. So as you said, my primary work right now is as a dance educator. I do work for a dance studio. I teach a couple classes a week. I've cut down a little bit since becoming a mom of three last year. So that is my, I guess my main job is mom to a five-year-old, a three-year-old, and a one-year-old, but I try to stay really active in dance and the arts. I love choreographing, and I'm grateful to be able to do that. I choreograph for musical theater as well as contemporary dance. And I think my most beloved job is as an advocate for dance. So just trying to share the word as much as I can about the value of dance and what it can contribute to our lives as individuals, and also how it benefits communities.
Yeah. And I saw that you are part of NDEO, which I'm excited to hear more about and talk about with you too. So yeah, just really cool seeing your advocacy for dance in particular and in the arts and in education and all of that is very needed to have people that are putting the time and the effort into showing the value of that. And so I appreciate the work that you're doing. It's very, very cool.
Well, thank you. We all do it in our own way, right? So
yes.
It's really great to be able to work with NDEO in particular and kind of be connected to that organization.
Yeah. So I'm really curious actually to hear, when did you first kind of discover dance and get into the dance world?
Yeah. So I was one of those kids that started dancing at a local studio at 4 or 5 years old. I started because my best friend at the time took classes and I just wanted to do whatever she did. So I followed her to class and I kind of became obsessed immediately.
Okay.
One of my earliest memories is I had this little toy ironing board and I would set it up and I would do pliés and tendus, you know, in the living room. So I love seeing the joy now that my students have when they come to their first dance class, because it reminds me of that feeling, how new it is and how wonderful it feels to move your body in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I stayed at that studio for many years until I was about 12 or 13. And I did kind of all the styles that a typical studio kid does, ballet and jazz and tap and acro. And I loved movie musicals. I desperately wanted to be, a Ginger Rogers type dancer, but I wasn't very good at jazz or tap and I couldn't sing. So I ended up really loving ballet and following that path. I went to a pre-professional ballet school and loved the discipline and the rigor and all of those little secrets about how you get your point shoes ready and how they make tutus.
It does feel kind of this sort of exclusive, community that you get to be a part of.
Yeah. And I think at times, in middle school in particularly, when I didn't feel like I belonged elsewhere, I always felt like I belonged in the ballet studio in a way, which
That's
was
beautiful.
So it became a safe haven in a lot of ways. Yeah. But I think even at that moment, there were really times where I knew that this doesn't feel quite right. Right. You know, it my body doesn't want to do things the way my teacher's body does. And, maybe we don't need to be standing around in our point shoes for 10 hours on a Sunday, in order to make this show happen. And so I think going back that far, the seeds were kind of planted for, the ideas that they're must be a way to keep the beauty and the magic, but also do things in a different way that are maybe a little bit better for dancers and more inclusive for people who don't look like the typical, dancer might look. Or the stereotypical. Yeah.
So that's interesting that planted the seed. And then what kind of led you into the work you're doing now with teaching and choreographing?
Yeah. So I had an injury my senior year of college that sort of sealed the deal senior year of high school that sealed the deal for ballet moving forward. I was able to continue working with some regional companies and individual choreographers, but I knew that my sort of goal of joining a big company wasn't going to happen at that point. Mm-hmm. So I went to college and sort of discovered modern dance and choreography, academia, this sort of bigger picture of what dance was and could be. And so after that, I started teaching, and that I say teaching very specifically, it was a job that I did at 24, 25, you kind of show up and you do your shuffles and your pliés and your tendus. And, I guess I knew that there were bigger things, but I also wasn't at a point in my understanding of pedagogy or education in general to really treat it as anything more than work,
Right.
And so because of that, I feel like I got really burnt out pretty easily. I think a lot of people do this in the early part of their career where they're trying to do all the things because they have to in order to pay the bills, but also everything is a new experience. And so while I was teaching, I was also going to lots of auditions for modern dance companies and working, as I mentioned, with a regional ballet company and, you know, just trying to do everything at once. And I ended up kind of really at a point where I was like, this isn't fun for me anymore. This isn't going the direction where I had wanted it to go. Mm-hmm. And I did kind of two things simultaneously. I took a non-dance job, and that could have been a career. And I also applied to the University of Maryland's graduate program for an MFA in dance. And was sort of like, if I don't get into the graduate program, then I have this like career that I'll do, and maybe I'll teach a little bit on the mm-hmm. side. But you know, God has his plans for you, and just where you, when you start to feel like it's the end of a road, the door opened to the University of Maryland. I was kind of shocked when I was accepted, but I ended up going there for the 3-year program, and it totally changed my life. I got to really understand the things that have become the basis of my work as an educator. You know, what does it mean to teach social well-being and emotional well-being through dance? What does it mean to teach higher order thinking skills through dance? What does it mean to teach kids who don't necessarily want to do this as a career, you know, but you in some ways have like a bigger chance to impact their lives because they don't have this vision of where they want dance to go. So I was really, really fortunate to have that experience at the University of Maryland, and it kind of set me off for where I am today.
Yeah, that's so neat. I love hearing that. And I'm curious, if you don't mind sharing, what was kind of your, was it a thesis at the end of the master's program?
Yeah.
What was your thesis?
Yes.
About or surrounding?
Oh, thank you. I actually love talking about it. So,
cool. Yeah.
It's just this like it was such an incredible moment of my life. The program was focused on teaching artistry. So it wasn't an education focused program. That was just sort of where my interests kind of ended up lying. But you did have a strong choreography track, and you we had the opportunity to produce like a 30-minute, what is that called? Like an evening, not quite an evening length concert, but a really big concert.
That's a pretty full on thing. Yes.
So that was just an amazing experience. We got to collaborate with the scenic designers and media designers and costume designers at the program. I love writing, and as I mentioned, I like love musical theater. And so a way that I've sort of kept that interest in my life is been exploring like dance theater. So integrating text and movement. And so I was able to create a concert inspired by the writing of Anne Morrow Lindbergh. She was Charles Lindbergh's wife, and just really an incredible poet and one of the early women in aviation herself. So really kind of groundbreaking on a lot of different fronts. And her writing about motherhood and marriage and being a woman in her time was, I found that really inspiring. So I worked with a group of 4 undergraduate students for a year and a half, I think, on kind of a process of exploring the writing together, doing our own writing and reflection in response to that, and then creating the choreography together. So it was educational in that it was very collaborative, and you know, I was working with undergraduate students at the same time I was teaching as a teaching assistant some courses for undergrads as well. So kind of using what I was learning, but so that was my thesis wasn't directly related to education, but it certainly informed who I am as a teacher.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Thanks for sharing. I love hearing kind of the process for people and what brings you to where you are now and kind of what helped inform that. So So I'm also curious. We both share our faith in common as well. And so I'm just super curious to hear basically how has your faith also informed your teaching and choreography and kind of the work that you do?
Yeah. So I like to think that my faith just informs how I approach the world and how I approach the people in it. So I really try to see everyone as they are, which is valued and beloved children of God, right? And we are all made by the same creator in his image. And so I try to, I like to say, I try to live my life in a way that others will come to know who God really is, even if I don't necessarily preach it all the time in my work, you know?
Right.
I have a friend who is a priest, and he wrote this amazing homily that he shared that is basically the essence of it is you might be the only gospel that someone ever comes to know, you know? And and so just how you live your life and interact with people really, I think, is how I try to share my faith with them. And it really informs how I teach. So I mentioned early in my ballet training, I kind of felt like things were not clicking or working for me. And some of that was that I sort of felt like, even though I had amazing teachers and I know that they personally cared for me, it was just the system of thought for teaching at that time. I kind of felt like a little robot there to do their bidding, you know, and like, you know, this is how I tell you to turn out. So this is how you turn out. And this is, you know, where your line is in arabesque. And so this is where it is. And I never want my students to feel that way. You know, I want them to see their value and their worth individually as a important part of their dance training, whether that is, you know, helping them to uncover how technique works in their individual body, the body that God made for them, that is amazing and special and beautiful, even if it doesn't look like the person next to them at the bar.
That's so important. Because it is maybe the natural flow of something like that is the opposite, where, you know, you kind of try to conform, or, you know, we can tend to compare to everyone around us because we want to be good and do well. And, you know, we think that means looking like that person next to us. So that's so, so good and so important, I think, as teachers, that we're helping foster that environment.
And you know, I'm not perfect at it. And I'm sure some of my, if my students listen to this, they'll be like, well, just the other day you said I had to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, you know, so, you know, we're always learning, right? But that's sort of the lens through which I try to approach teaching is that, you know, we are all made individually and beautifully, and we all have our own individual things to contribute to dance, both from a technique perspective, but also, you know, with our artistic expression as a performer or as a choreographer. What you are doing is a gift to share with other people. And so what you say through that gift, it could be therapeutic and helpful for you, but you also have to consider what you're giving to other people, you know, when you do that. Like I went through a phase again in my early 20s where, you know, everything was kind of down and negative because it just felt good to be able to get it off my chest, you know, all these emotions I was feeling. And then as I got older, and especially through the process of working with my mentors on my thesis concert and hearing their feedback in real time so often throughout the process, it was sort of like, okay, so it's good for me to share how I feel, and my feelings are important, but also, you know, I need to decenter myself a little bit and make space for everybody who's going to participate in this work as a performer and an audience member. And so, you know, I try to model that for my students by finding a balance of things that we create about, you know, and it's not, I try not to make it all heavy and, you know, big issues, you know. And also, like, dance is a place to share joy. And for me, that joy comes from my relationship with God, you know. So I want to help my students tap into that wherever they find their joy, you know.
Yeah, that's really, really beautiful. Just thinking about, like, that it is also in like a consideration of the people that are going to be a part of the experience, and whether that's audience or the dancers or whoever. So yeah, that's really, really good. So I'm curious, you said that you enjoy writing, and I can tell that just from the work that you do, because you have a wonderful blog and create such really amazing resources for educators. So I'm curious, when did that passion begin? And then also, when did you first create kind of your Shannon Dooling Dances resource hub, I guess, or like blog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks. So fifth grade is when I discovered my love of writing.
Oh, yay.
I had a teacher who really encouraged it. And so I always enjoyed English language arts and sort of that side of education.
Isn't it amazing how like a teacher can impact our lives so much, you know, and just speak life into us.
Mm-hmm. Seriously. And in ways that they probably don't realize. Like I still remember the essay that she said was good, you know, and that sort of like, wow, okay, cool. So, you know, this might be a thing for me to explore. And I think it's important for those of us who work with students to remember that, you know, it's not always those big feel good moments that are making an impact on our students. Like you said, like we speak life in the smallest ways.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
So cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so my parents desperately tried to get me to do a journaling major or a journalism major or something in addition, at least to dance. And I was very stubborn. So I didn't really consider it. And then when I started working for NDEO, the National Dance Education Organization, I was given some writing tasks. And I sort of realized like, oh, hey, like people need to be able to communicate about dance, you know, in order for other people to understand what we're doing, right? Because they might, legislators and school administrators and funding people might not understand what we're doing in the classroom on stage, but if we can write it in language that they will understand, then we have a better chance of getting them on our side, you know, when it comes to making dance accessible in schools or funding community programs or, you know, the many other things that we ask of non-dance people.
Mm-hmm.
So around the time where I was working for them and doing that kind of writing, I also started a personal blog about dance, and sort of the early writings were a lot like the choreography that I was doing, and that it was like musing on things and just my takes and opinions and very personal, very, you know, maybe a friend or two would read it, but not really beyond that.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a piece about dance in college and being a dance major. And that was sort of in response to a piece I'd heard on the news about how, you know, you should only go to college for things that are going to make you a lot of money. And I was sort of like, well, you know, I do make my living as a dancer in the dance field, but there's so much more to it than that. And like why we pursue education in general. And that piece was called In Defense of the Dance Major, and it ended up getting a lot of traction. And so that was sort of the moment where I was like, there might be something for me in a blog, but I was also very scared of how quickly it kind of went around the internet and was picked up by other places. And so I stopped writing for a while.
Yeah. I can imagine that would be a little intimidating.
Yeah. It's like, I never,
like just the personal nature of it too.
Yeah, exactly. Like these are my thoughts, and I, you know, I didn't really expect them again to go beyond like family and friends and maybe a couple people in my Facebook circle.
Right.
And so, you know, I think sometimes again, God is like making this pathway open for you. But, you know, I didn't have the capacity to trust at that moment that it was like the place to really go.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I look back and I'm like, man, I should have capitalized on that a little bit more. But, you know, all things, you know, happen in the right timing,
yes,
you know, and yeah, God saw that I wasn't ready then.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like it can be easy to feel the I missed an opportunity or something, but the cool thing with God is that there's no scarcity with him. So it's like, there's going to be other opportunities in the future that come, which is really cool. So,
Yeah. And, you know, I thank him that they did come. I sort of took about a year off and kind of then went back into it. And once I realized that like maybe other people might be reading this, I started thinking about it again, very, very similar to the choreographic process we talked about, like, how can I decenter myself a little bit and make it more beneficial for others who might end up reading it. And so that was when I, you know, really had the inspiration and desire to start sharing more about, like, well, here's some things I've learned from my amazing teachers and mentors, and here's how I apply them in my classes, and maybe you'll find that helpful. And so it kind of became more of a resource, I guess, at that point for educators and choreographers, as opposed to, you know, just like a personal journal type blog.
And
I'm super grateful that things like it kind of started catching on thanks to Facebook. In a lot of ways, I've been able to share the things I write about and the sort of resources that I've been creating, just kind of to build upon the things in the blog. And I hope that I'm able to help answer people's questions that they have and help provide just more information, different approaches through that blog and sharing it on social media.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so it's cool hearing how kind of that started evolving. And then when did you get the vision for the holistic dance teacher side of things?
Yeah, so it kind of, I think it took off during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, all of a sudden there was a need for different ways of doing everything, right? And particularly related to dance and teaching. And so I had two small things that I was sharing, you know, with people, my sort of approach to lesson planning and then journaling prompts for students. And, you know, I kind of made the journaling prompts available to anybody, you know, because I thought, like, that's kind of a way we can keep students engaged, even from home, is get them at least thinking about dance, writing about dance. I started doing a lot of choreography prompts as well and posting them on the blog for dances that could be made like in your living room or in your backyard or wherever you happen to have space available to you. And so it was sort of at that moment that I realized, like, I want to make this a more cohesive thing. And I've always loved the word holistic. It just, like, I don't know, it just has been kind of on my heart for a really long time. And again, talking about God's timing before, like, it just became the time to really put that into action as a teacher. And so I started thinking about what specifically makes the way I try to teach maybe different from the ways I was taught. And that word, again, holistic, just kept coming up. Like, we are more than bodies moving in space. And as a teacher, we want to nurture all those different things. So that kind of became like the motto, the brand, whatever you want to call it. And it kind of just grew from there. And I'm fortunate that my husband was really supportive during that pandemic time to, you know, as we're balancing life with two small kids at the time, to also, you know, give me space and time and support to really build it and work. So it's been about, maybe 3 years of really kind of dedicated focus on that aspect of my career.
Yeah, that's so cool. And you definitely are living it out, I guess you could say, like, I'm sure with having three kids and, you know, teaching and choreographing and being part of organizations, that you're living the life of majority of dance educators probably, which is like so many things happening. Just for you personally, how do you find kind of the balance of the pouring out and the giving and, you know, as you teach, just the energy that it takes and everything, and also kind of maintaining your own well-being, maintaining that holistic perspective on your own health, you know?
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I that's like where that word holistic, you know, kind of really sank into my bones in a way of like, you know, yes, I want to do this all for my students, but I can't do it without also prioritizing myself. And that, I think, is what has made this leg of my career very different from that time in my early 20s, where it was, you know, really, I was on the verge of burnout, you know, and not to say that that doesn't happen now, you know, it happens to all of us at times, but I feel like I choose in those moments to not to just ignore it until it's at the point of I'm ready to give up this career.
Right.
But find ways. So
seeing the warning signs a little earlier. And
So I think for me, the balance comes with a bit of privilege. You know, I say no to things that I know are not going to fit into my family's life. And I'm able to do that because we are like a two income family, and we're fortunate in many ways that I have a little bit of leeway there to not always have to say yes for the paycheck.
Right, right.
But that no also goes in other things. Like, I think we say yes to a lot of things as artists and educators beyond like the mandatory yeses that are needed for our survival. But we say yes to a lot of things because they like feel good on our ego and they look good on our resume. And even if they're not the soul feeling things, even if they're not the things that are going to take us deeper on the path that God wants us to be on with our career, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to discern those two things and, you know, balancing that all out with like priorities, right? So my priority are my relationships in my life, and the relationships with the students certainly are an important part of that, but my family and my husband and my friends and, you know, all of that, trying to nurture those relationships first and then nurture the things that are fun secondly. And I think in terms of just like health, I've really been trying to think about how I teach and seeing the choices that I make as an educator in terms of fueling my body, planning my lessons, drinking my water, you know, getting as much sleep as possible, taking a shower in the morning instead of, you know, doing laundry and all those other things that, you know, I guess we do. But seeing all of that as self-care and seeing all of that as filling my cup, even if it's in very meager ways and maybe not exciting ways, like having a spa day might be. but like, you know, when I teach, am I demonstrating on both sides? Am I warming my body up first? Am I taking time to cool down after? And that is the self-care that sort of helps propel me into being able to be a better teacher.
That makes a lot of sense. And it is funny how something like taking a shower in the morning, how we can sort of skip it because it's like, well, I need to get X, Y, and Z done or whatever. And then, yeah. And we don't even realize how that is affecting our overall well-being, you know. That's just a great example. I love it because it's so real and so true.
Yeah. We as artists, I think we are so generous. It's part of what makes us, what draws us to the art and what keeps us in it. Mm-hmm. But you can't, like you said, you got to fill your cup, right? Then there's nothing to pour out if you don't do those, at least those very basic things for yourself.
Yeah, it makes sense. I love during the panel thing that the panel discussion.
Yeah.
Panel presentation. I'm trying to figure out how to word it.
Community, a panel community. I don't know. It was so wonderful. Exactly. Yeah.
I love the way you started was by just sharing a story, kind of like an anecdotal story of, you know, the day in the life of a dance teacher that's just overly burdened and, you know, just stretched too thin and kind of cutting corners with taking care of herself and stuff. And I'm like, I think we've all felt that to some degree, you know, and it was so good. So I'm curious we're just thinking back to even that story and the things that you shared. Are there any tips that you'd be willing to share with our listeners today about just very practical things that we can do to maintain that sort of holistic view of our lives and encourage wellness for ourselves and for those around us?
Yeah. So I think, you know, there are those just very baseline things. Like I make a big salad every week and that's what my husband and I eat for lunch, you know, and it's like a simple thing, but it takes a little bit of thought out of the day. And then it also, you know, helps my physical health, right? And so things like meal prepping, things like making time for the little things that you can do to encourage and foster your creativity. So I find really like a lot of times when I'm starting to feel the most burnout is when I'm not letting myself be creative for my own sake. It's all, you know, okay, we got to get this choreography done for the show, or, you know, I got to write this blog post because I haven't written anything in a long time, you know, and then the creativity goes from being a gift that we have to a burden, something on our to-do list. So, you know, I like to do little dances for myself every once in a while in the living room. And sometimes they make it onto Instagram, and sometimes they're just for me.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, literally just 5 minutes of improv and picking out my favorite moments and putting them together. I like to do things like play Legos and Magna tiles with my kids, you know.
Yeah.
It's creative and joyful for me to make something, you know, and then we also spend some time together. I would like to say that I journal, you know, but I don't anymore. I did at one point, but you know, if that is your yeah. creative outlet, then, you know, but just that 5 minutes of indulging your own creativity, I think can go a long way. And it is fairly practical, you know, to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think like the biggest thing and the hardest thing is just thinking about your values and your priorities and making choices that reflect those. And that's something I've really been trying to do this year. We have sort of sacred Sundays in our house, which are, you know, not necessarily that we don't go to the store, we don't, you know, do stuff when we have to do it, but you know, we pretty much every week we start with church and then we end with a family meal, you know. And so that is kind of, you know, anchor points on that day to just reflect and engage with those parts of our life that are really important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of it feeds the soul for whatever else comes during the week.
Yeah, that's so good. I like the idea of creating those anchor points. You know, what are those in each of our lives? And then even like you said, with the meal prepping, you know, something where, because I think we can get into kind of that decision fatigue as well, which can be overwhelming. And so it's easy to then just go to whatever the easy option is, which isn't always going to be something that's really helping our bodies or helping, you know.
Yeah. Or helping our souls, or helping how we feel about our life. You know, we run into the grocery store to grab whatever's convenient rather than maybe going to the farmer's market and supporting the farmers directly, like we might want to do, you know, or whatever. Uh-huh. So just trying to find little moments throughout your week or your month where you're like, okay, I'm going to do something for my values today, you know, and whatever, whether that's a service thing or, you know, an opportunity to give or whatever it is, just, it does help, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like there's just that little bit of intentionality goes a long way in that, for sure. Thanks for sharing. Those are a lot of good practical tips we can take. So yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on community and just the power of community in life, but also in dance, and what makes you passionate about that. Because I feel like that's a theme that I see in your work. And when I'm like looking at your website and stuff, I'm like, oh, it looks like community is a big value for you. So yeah.
Oh yeah, it really is. I mean, as I mentioned, you know, during those awkward middle school years and beyond, the studio just became my safe haven. And so I think that I really want that same experience for my students. And I know some of them feel that just based on their relationship with dance.
Yeah.
But also I think something that we both believe in is the power of the relationships that you make with your fellow dancers. And those relationships can just go so far in supporting who we are as people and our emotional well-being. And so I really try that to the best that I'm able to create in community very intentionally in my classes. Some ways that I try to do that is we start class in a circle formation most of the time. And I just believe that that's such an equalizing and kind of democratic formation, right? Because we can all see each other. But then we have sort of the shared responsibility of seeing what's behind each other. So in hip hop, an art form that I'm fascinated by, but not super well versed in from a movement perspective, but just culturally, I know that the cipher, the circle, is in some ways a community protection tool. You know, like you can see what's behind the person across from you, and you have their back, literally, you know?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like we can look at each other, but then we can see what's around ourselves and support and protect one another in that way.
That's a cool image. I like that.
Yeah. So I love circles whenever we can make them happen. And I try to start and as often as I can end class with that formation.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do activities, especially at the beginning of the year, that allow the students to get to know one another and allow me to get to know them. So, you know, I think some of my older students might, you know, roll their eyes when I bring out my little get to know you surveys in August when we start classes. But I remind them, like, you're not the same person you were last year, right? Like, certainly your musical tastes have changed at least, you know, and I want to know what music you want me to play in class, but also, you know, how confident you are to receive feedback, how confident you are to improvise in front of one another, how confident you are to be in the front of the room or go first across the floor is hopefully different. And whether it's more confident or less confident, that's fine. But I can meet you where you are if I know you where you are right now.
Right.
Yeah. So we, you know, I do those little surveys. We play games that we get to know one another, and I get to kind of observe how they're handling the games this year and kind of pick up on sort of where they are.
Yeah.
And then I try to play and have fun, you know, whether that's improv with the older students or choreographic exercises or literally like dance games with all ages, but the middle school set kind of seems to really love them.
Yeah.
It just gives us a chance to let the guard down of like, if we tend to go into robot mode and like, I'm here to dance beautifully and be perfect, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of releases all of that and lets us just focus on having fun together in time and space.
Yes. I love that so much. Yeah. And it's cool that we have a similar passion, I think, for sort of that element. And I love that you're really integrating that into like a dance studio space, because it's maybe a bit more normalized in kind of the public school dance setting.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in a dance studio, it tends to be a little bit more like, okay, we're getting straight into pliés or whatever it is. And, you know, a lot of times I feel like the focus is not as much on the community element. So I love that so much. And I'm excited that there's more resources for that and that you're helping to create some of those things and, you know, bring to mind for the teacher the importance and the power of that and how that will really only benefit, you know, their students and their dancing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of what I do comes from my experience researching dance in K through 12 through my work with NDEO mm-hmm. and also teaching. I only did 2 years before I made a career change, but I taught in private K through 12 schools for 2 years. And it really kind of helped shape how I approach my work with my students in the studio now, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, there doesn't need to be so many differences in how we approach, right? Mm-hmm. Like good pedagogy is good pedagogy, I think.
Yes.
And building community should be a big part of mm-hmm. part of our values as educators, yeah. no matter where we teach.
And kind of seeing what we can learn from different realms, I guess, of dance education, you know, and how yeah. that can cross over is really exciting too. So yeah,
definitely.
And speaking of, it would be fun to hear a little bit more about the work that you've done with NDEO. So it's National Dance Educators Organization. Is that right?
National Dance Education Organization.
National Dance Education Organization. Yes.
Yeah.
We have TDEA, which is the Texas Dance Educators Association. So
yeah.
My brain is like crossing.
I know there's so many acronyms in the dance world.
In education world. Like,
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. You got to keep your ABC soup all organized.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been so fortunate to be connected to NDEO for over a decade now. And I think last April marked a full decade of working with them in different capacities. Mm-hmm. My mentor at the University of Maryland, Karen Bradley, introduced me to NDEO and took myself and another student from the school to the conference in 2012. Huh. I got to kind of present a poster, which at the time I like didn't know anything about dance research or poster making or presenting. And so it's so funny to look back on that experience now and to remember some of the people who were coming up to talk to me about the work. And like, now I know them as like, wow, like you're like, you wrote these books that I love or yeah. whatever. But at the time I was such a newbie, and that's what I love about NDEO is that there are like these just legends in dance education who attend the conferences and teach the courses and everything, but they're so down to earth and amazing. And they, you know, they'll come up and talk to a second year grad student about, you know, her new philosophy of teaching ballet to recreational students, you know.
Love it.
And so, yeah, and so I loved that experience at the conference so much that I did my required internship for graduate students that I had to do with NDEO. And from there was offered a job doing data entry, which again, I didn't really know anything about, but you know, it was a foot in the door and they trained me. They were so wonderful. And then my role kind of just bloomed with them, really like an amazing group of women on the staff. And I ended up working full-time there for a while, working specifically with the National Honor Society for Dance Arts, which I just want to give a plug to anybody listening who might have a studio or school program. It is such a cool way to honor your students by establishing a chapter of the Dance Honor Society and then inducting your students. And it just really puts what we do as dance educators on par with other disciplines, academic and artistic, that have these opportunities. So
yeah, I love that that's a thing, because we had I know they had started implementing it in the district that I was working in.
Cool.
Yeah, pretty exciting to see.
Yeah. So I loved doing that. But again, I feel like so much of my story is just like, God has this other path for you to take now. So my then fiance was making a career change and ended up in Arizona. I was living in the Washington, D.C. area during my work with NDEO. And so I kind of took a leap of faith and left my full-time job with them. And I've been fortunate to stay connected in a different way, kind of working from home with them from Arizona now. Mm-hmm. And I really just believe in the importance, as I've said a bunch of times already, so sorry for repeating myself, but just advocating for dance. And that's as simple as sharing with other people, like we're doing now, like, right, what dance means to us, what dance means to the students that we've taught, and why it's so important. Mm-hmm. And we all have a story. And just by sharing that story, we are helping to advocate for that. And that's such a big part of what NDEO does. So I am grateful to have had that opportunity.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I've kind of been like adjacent to, some of the things that we've done. So it's cool to learn more about the organization and hopefully get connected in, and seeing the work that they're doing is really, really exciting. So
I mean, there's tons of like practical and pragmatic things that they do too. Like they offer, as I said, conferences and online courses. And so there's lots of ways to be connected on a way that will benefit you as a teacher too. Yeah. Or I mean, the general you.
Right.
So all the listeners like benefit us as teachers. And then there's also this sort of overarching goal, which is to advocate for dance.
So fun. Good. Yes. Very cool. I love to ask everyone that comes on the show if there's something that you would like to share with other artists right now. So just if there's something in particular kind of on your heart, on your mind that you'd like to share.
So I think the biggest thing that helps me is to remember that I am uniquely created for a special purpose here on Earth. And so were you, all of us as individuals and as artists in particular. What we have to communicate as artists, the way we choose to do that communication, our medium, our projects, our whatever, is special and unique to us. And so it is very easy to start comparing yourself to other people as an artist in particular, and to say, you know, I wish my choreography looked more like this person's, or, you know, I wish that I had the same level of success, however you define success, as this other person. But when I start to feel those feelings, I just remember, you know, in art and in life, I am unique. I was made special. I was chosen for this path and this purpose that I'm on. And I might not always understand it, and I might not always like it, but it's mine.
Thank you. That's so good. Such a good encouragement for everyone. I think we need to hear that like on a daily basis.
I try to remind myself daily.
Love it. Well, and just for a fun question to wrap us up today is, what is one of your favorite things right now? And that could be literally anything. So a fun getting outside, some food, I don't know, like literally anything.
So my favorite thing all the time is the beach.
Yes.
I'm looking around my bedroom now at all my like beach paraphernalia, beach themed decor that I have. So, and I think why I love the beach so much is just the ocean. It just that reminder of like the ebb and flow of life. And so I'm going to give you a really weird thing. My favorite thing right now is my daughter's sound machine that makes an ocean wave. I hear it when I'm, I put her to bed and then I can kind of hear it wafting throughout the house. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Life goes on. It's peaceful. And so, yeah, sometimes it's just those little weird things in our life that can be super reassuring and and calming for us.
For sure. It really does have that effect. We just recently got like a new alarm clock that has some different sounds and things. And it's been really nice. Like fall asleep.
It changes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. So for nice. Sure. Yes. So I'm right there with you. That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, Shannon, this has been such a gift to be able to spend this time with you and hear more about your journey and just the passion that you have for dance and helping educators and being able to pour into students. So thank you for sharing your time with us today. And I'd love to let people know where they can connect to you and your resources. So what's kind of the best place for people to find you?
Oh, great. So my website is sort of the house of my blog and all other things, the resource collection and videos and other stuff. So that is shannondoolingdances.com. And then I'm also on that same moniker, Shannon Dueling Dances. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. So I love to use those tools to genuinely connect with people as much as I can. Yeah. So, I social media has its downfalls, but for sure, I love when people reach out and send a message or get in touch. And so feel free. Yeah.
Awesome. And you're in Arizona, right? So
I am in Arizona. Regionally. Yeah. Southern Arizona. Yes. Cool. Yes. So, and if you're local to Tucson or Southern Arizona, I love to meet new people as well, for sure. So
it's such a pretty area. My grandparents lived in Flagstaff and then I have some family in Prescott, Arizona. So been kind of in Arizona a lot throughout my life and I love getting to travel there. It's so beautiful. So
yeah, it's really cool. I always, I miss the East Coast and I always say I'm like, my personality is very East Coast, like, hustle, bustle, go, go, go. But if my husband had to relocate anywhere, Arizona's great.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah, well, thank you so much, Shannon, and excited to see what all is still to be in the journey,
Yeah, for both of us. Thank you for having me and I look forward to connecting with you again, for sure.
For sure. Thank you. You can find all the links, full show notes, and additional resources on our website, creativeimpactpodcast.com. If you're interested in supporting the show, some great ways to do that are to share it with a friend, to rate and review wherever you're listening, and then also if you're interested in giving financially, you can check out our Patreon community where you get bonus content each month and have a special part in helping make this podcast possible. You can access our Patreon community on the link at our website or by going to creativeimpactpodcast.com/PATREON. Thank you all so much for listening to the Creative Impact Podcast. The music for the show was produced by Michael Cash. Until next time, remember that you were designed to create. You were made to inspire. Continue living with purpose and making an impact. I'll see you next time, friends.